Hi there, I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. CUPPOW.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And all of you know what we do by now, don't you?
Collectively, we are Groundworks Inc. And we design and build and install gardens in New York City.
And the surrounding area. And we do it with a soundtrack.
You can't not say it. I know.
So our show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. And, you know, we delve into humans' relationships with the plant kingdom at lots of different levels, right?
We sure do.
So many different ways. And plants are indispensable for our survival.
For life,
even though the Republicans might not think so. I think most people do. but I believe that humans want more than just to survive, right?
We want to be beautiful.
We want to be beautiful. And I
found our vanity, really.
Our vanity, especially as Americans. So I'm going to paraphrase the great American conservationist John Muir. He said it better than I could, and in a brief and elegant way. He said, we want beauty as well as bread. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the two things of life for me.
That's what we need. So now John Muir is probably referring to the beauty of the great outdoors, of course. But Alice and I are going to bring it down to a much more human level here. We're going to explore plants used for beauty of a more personal and kind of esoteric but also practical nature. And being that we're two ladies, you know, we care about this stuff. And I think, you know, everybody cares
well,
about
it. Well, it's historic. It's historic.
Yeah.
It's a historic use of plants.
Yeah. So here on Heritage, we have lots of great shows and so much content about food, what you put into your body to feed and to heal yourself. So we wanted to do, the topic is so huge, we wanted to do a whole series on what you put on your body to make yourself feel better, to feel cleaner, and to feel, as Alice said, more beautiful. So botanical beauty is what we're going to talk about all the month of October on We Dig Plants. And we kind of broke it down. So this first episode is going to be like a little primer on the historical use of plants. And then we're going to have three guests in the next 3 weeks from different companies as well as individuals to kind of help us make sense of it from their corner of the beauty.
From their commercial corner
of the beauty universe, you know? So let's start with what I'm going to call, this is by no means comprehensive, a botanical beauty miscellany. You know, isn't that like very Victorian?
Yes.
It's a miscellany. Some of our, like, favorite...
Sounds like a corsage.
It does. Yeah. I'm kind of wearing a corsage today, right now.
You are.
So this is just, like, random fun facts about plants as beauty products through the ages. And we have to start with the ancients that I consider, like, the original beauty queens,
mm-hmm.
okay? Like, if they were living in New York now, they would be in the West Village. You know what I mean? The ancient Egyptians, mm-hmm. all right? Alice, you want to talk about...
Let's talk about Cleopatra.
Yes.
Right? The first beauty. The famed Egyptian beauty. She wrote a book on beauty secrets and the art of makeup. Who knew that, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the time she appeared on the scene, the ancient Egyptians had discovered secrets to treat conditions like wrinkles and stretch marks and scarring. No other culture has been so influenced by the concept of beautification and body care as the Egyptians. Even the lowliest of citizens were supplied olive oil with their wages so they could care for their skin and their body.
Should we do that, Al, with our staff? Should we give them like a vial? Here you go. You know, you're looking a little dry.
Protect your skin from the sun.
I think there'd be like an uproar and a riot.
Given the fact that most ancient Egyptians were dead by the age of 40, one may well ask oneself what they were worried about. Well, beauty to them was sacred, and life was full of risks. Accidents happened, and scars often did not heal very well. Burn marks were hidden by an ointment made of red ochre, coal, and sycamore juice. The oil extracted from fenugreek, Greek hay, seeds was used to improve the skin's condition. Wrinkling of the skin, an effect of excessive exposure to the sun and not just of old age, was treated by applying a wax-based remedy containing gum of frankincense, moringa oil, ground cypress grass, and fermented plant juice.
That's got to smell That's good.
Lovely. Wow.
And working with what they got and there in the desert.
And then the French invented perfume.
Yes, we're going to get to perfume next, right?
Cleopatra, like most people of the period, used oils to scent her body. Cover up the fermented plant juice. Egyptian perfumes were famous throughout the Mediterranean. Pliny discovered a perfume which still had its full fragrance after 8 years. So perfumes were mostly based on plants, the roots, blossoms, and leaves of henna, cinnamon, turpentine, iris, lilies, roses, bitter almonds, etc., which were soaked in oil and sometimes cooked. The essence was extracted by squeezing, and the oil was added to produce liquid perfumes, and while creams and salves were the result of adding wax or fat. Many perfumes had more than a dozen ingredients.
Now, they perfumed the dead, too.
Yes, you know,
in the
right.
embalming process. Yeah. Like Alice said, the sacredness of beauty. Mm-hmm. It was not just a surface thing, but it was like, even in death, you need to be presentable.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know who I think of as following kind of in the model of the ancient Egyptians? It just occurred to me, the Kardashians. They are preserving, they're mummifying their faces, Alice, right? Don't
yeah,
you think?
Right.
They are totally sculpting. They're like the modern day,
right.
you know, Egyptian.
Right, and Caitlin looks just like Cleopatra.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So let's go to my favorite corner of the ancient world now.
The ancient Romans,
moving on the other side of the Mediterranean. The Romans, they learned a lot from the Egyptians, but they were no slouches either.
No.
In the beauty department. And they had the money. They had the vast empire throughout the world, so they could basically import any beauty product from even as far away as China. And I found them the most interesting based on the sheer variety and inventiveness mm-hmm. of their ingredients. So listen to this. For eye makeup, the ancient Romans liked large eyes with long eyelashes and eyebrows that almost met in the middle. So they loved the whole unibrow look. Okay, and then now when I think about it, when I look at frescoes, they did have yeah. kind of a unibrow look. So they would darken their eyebrows with antimony or soot and then extend them inwards. On the eyes, they would apply coal like the ancient Egyptians.
That's K-O-H-L.
Exactly,
right.
Which we still use. and they made it with saffron, with ashes, with soot, and also with antimony. Another way, which I found really interesting, that they used to darken the eyes was to use date stones and charred petal roses. So they would like scrub their eyelids with rough date, you know, the pit of the date.
Right.
And I guess it had some kind of, you know, oil. And so they would scrub it across their eyelids.
And what's antimony?
I don't know. I thought it was a mineral.
Okay.
Because coal is made from a mineral,
mm-hmm.
which is also kind of antiseptic. So mm-hmm. it's very interesting because the Egyptians used coal and it actually protected their eyes a little bit from infection, which
mm-hmm.
is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then the Romans were into also not just their eyes, but their cheeks. They liked to have pink cheeks. It was like a sign of good health,
mm-hmm.
kind of like we do now. So the women would apply several substances on their face to achieve that result. They would use poppy and rose petals, which mm-hmm. is interesting, red chalk, alkanet, Tyrian vermilion, crocodile dung. Okay.
Who's the first one that used crocodile dung?
Who's that
chick?
I don't know. Red ochre, and because it was more expensive, it was imported from Belgium, which was also under their control.
Auspices, right?
Mulberry juice,
mm-hmm.
wine dregs. Okay, which if anyone has ever made wine knows what that smells like.
Mm-hmm.
Cinnabar and red lead, which were cinnabar
poisonous.
And red lead is poisonous, and they
right.
would rub it on their cheeks. They didn't live long either.
Right.
So and as a sidebar, I just wanted to add this. on the nails, they like their nails to be colored too. They applied a mixture made with sheep's fat and blood. Okay. God, that's good. Has anyone ever smelled sheep's fat?
No.
I mean, it's disgusting, you know?
So they would like dip their fingers into
that? Yeah, they would make this mixture and then paint it. And then, so anyway, that's why they needed the perfumes. Now their skin, like the Egyptians, they also made a lot of creams and lotions, and they were, most of them derived from plants, and they were really into hiding their wrinkles and their pimples and their sunspots, and they really liked to have fair skin too. So they wanted to get freckles off their face. They would make these masks of made out of lentils, barley, lupin, honey, fennel, and they would blend it with oil like oregano seeds, sulfur, vinegar, goose grease, basil juice, and hawthorn. So I thought some of the masks that we use now are a little funky.
Hawthorn,
Sometimes they would add essence of rose or myrrh. For pimples, they use a mixture of barley, flour, and butter. And the weirdest one that I read about, sunspots were treated with the ashes of snails. So you've got these snails. I mean, I know they ate weirdly.
Yeah,
they ate just about everything that crawled, swam, or flew.
Right.
But they made use of charred snails to deal with their sunspots.
I wonder how they discovered that as like a byproduct of the snail.
I don't know. It's really, it's something you kind of really can go
I always
deep
think about
into.
The first people that tasted, you know.
Well, my husband always like does that impersonation. He said, who decided to drink milk from a cow? It was like a caveman dare. I said, what do you mean? He would say, well, I dare you to go over there and drink what comes out.
Yeah. No, I dare you.
I'll give you three antlers. Or it was like the ancient Roman equivalent, Alice, of like a shyster, of like that dermatologist that's on the subway.
Yeah,
like, you must use sheep's fat and ashes of snails, and I will get rid of your pimples. You know, I don't know why he has a Russian accent. All right. Because he's ancient. Anyway.
Perfume.
Yes. Alice, do you want to talk about how they covered up these foul odors?
Sure. So it was really the ancient Romans that used perfumes. Not only was smelling good considered a sign of good health, but they also used perfumes to hide the bad odor of some of the ingredients that the cosmetics had. Perfumes were available in liquid, sticky, or solid forms, which is still applicable today.
Yes.
And were made by macerating flowers, leaves, and roots. They were added to the base of the perfume, a substance called anfacio, derived from the maceration of olives or grape juice. And the perfume thus obtained was then mixed with dyes. In addition, they also used deodorants made with alum, aluminum, rose petals, and iris.
And you know what's interesting about that? If you look at your antiperspirant,
it still is the same thing.
Alum is the same. So
well, that's the thing that everyone also tries to avoid.
Yes.
Is the
but
alum.
If you don't use it,
doesn't really work.
You do start sweating,
that's,
you know?
Right.
So, yeah, like when I was in Italy, I think maybe they took alum out of the deodorant.
Yeah.
Antiperspirant.
Yeah.
With some stronger. So let's talk about hair, okay?
Right.
Whenever you see any sculpture or any painting or any fresco, the women had fabulous, elaborate hairdos.
The college where I went to school, Fairfield University in Connecticut, actually just sent me a flyer. They have a really great relationship with the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and they are having an exhibit of statues. And it's all about hair.
Oh, my God. We have to go.
Yeah. So it's all about the different kinds of hair in the different cultures. And it's all based on the sculptures from the Met. It's going to be
a
great
show.
That's
fantastic. Yeah. Yes. That's like taking a sort of a snippet from each era.
Right.
Well, the Romans, you know, they're going to be well represented there because they wore wigs
like
the ancient Egyptians. They were prone to getting lice because as much as they bathed, they still, you know, had issues with that. So they would wear wigs to hide their white hair or hair that was damaged by dyes. And during the imperial era, these wigs were made with real hair. Mm-hmm. Blonde was imported from Northern Europe, while black from India. Mm-hmm. And in addition, the Romans used dyes to accentuate their hair colors. For example, blonde hair was enhanced with a mixture of beech ash and goat's fat, while red was maintained by pulverizing the leaves of Lawsonia intermis, a plant in the henna family. And black hair instead was obtained by black antimony with animal fat, cypress leaves that were first brewed and then saturated in vinegar or absinthe ash mixed with rose oil. Now imagine that on your head.
Yeah.
It's like this goat fat, you know, and then some crushed leaves and vinegar and ash.
Well, isn't, don't the Rastafarians, don't they use fat to
keep their,
to keep the, the curl?
That'd be curious, you know? So yeah, they douse themselves in animal fat and then they covered
they painted it
perfume.
on their fingernails.
Yeah. So then when they went to bathe, because they were all about bathing, right? Uh-huh. They must not have gone, their heads must have been above water at all times, right?
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Well, but, you know, they also had people to recreate. They would bathe probably, and then just people would, you know,
take care of them. Take the wig off.
So did you find any, when you were doing your research, was there any information on tooth care?
Yes, the ancient Romans, they didn't talk about that much. I know that, like, in India and in other places, they chew on the betel nut.
Right.
And they would use that to stain their lips red.
Uh-huh.
But that actually caused tooth decay, you know? So they would chew on this nut.
So
their teeth would turn black, their lips turn red.
Right.
And they would find that beautiful.
So let's talk about India.
Oh, yes.
That's
yes.
like a whole other...
So, yeah, we didn't want to just focus on the Western world because, you know, we don't want to be too Eurocentric. So let's visit India.
Yes.
Women in the Mughal period in India, northern India, like I said, chewed the betel leaves, which decayed their teeth. And they used saffron as a beneficial beautification herb.
So not just for cooking.
No, they use it for skin ailments, cleansing of the skin. It was used in the production of fairness creams, cleansers, and anti-blemish lotions. And that stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
It's like the most expensive like spice or herb. So
yeah.
I know that they had it more handy, but so they wanted to be paler as well. The Romans wanted to be fair. The Egyptians wanted to be fair. And
that's
so the,
interesting.
It is. You know,
I wonder where that aesthetic comes from.
It's odd. Right. You know? Now, neem oil. Okay, Alice and I and many gardeners know neem oil is a great fungicide and insecticide.
Mm-hmm.
But in India, the cosmetics uses have been known for centuries. It has the antifungal and antibacterial and detoxifying property. So they use it in lotions, creams, even toothpaste. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what that tastes like.
Yeah.
Soap, shampoos, and a lot of dermatology products have neem in it for like itchy skin and eczema and psoriasis.
Right.
And it's also used in anti-aging products.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting.
We're using a lot of tea tree oil right now in my house because there is an outbreak of lice at my child's school.
Right.
And I'm using it as a preventative.
Oh, that's cool. So how are you applying it?
It says shampoo.
Okay.
And it's very strong. The smell is very distinctive.
Yeah.
It's a very clean, you know, anti, like a...
So how does it work? Is it sort of like to repel the lice?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. And because it's antiseptic too.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
But if that doesn't work out, the neem oil is...
I know. I could just spray it on the kid's
head. You know, go to Little India.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll find it.
Well, we've got some in our van.
Yeah, that's right. How would that go over in the daycare center?
Hey, kid, next lineup.
Alice is going to spray you with this antifungal, no insects
and
will
the aphids will
scalp.
Go away.
And then there'll be like the backlash, you know? Okay, the last Indian product that I thought was really interesting that I had never heard of, which I want to do some more research on, is called Amla. And it's from the plant called Emblica officinalis. It is sought after by the cosmetic industry for its high content of vitamin C, and the herb also gives out an oil, which is really great remedy for various hair and scalp problems. So I want to give a shout out to a couple of websites that were really helpful to us in researching all these interesting things. One is beautytidbits.com. And the other one, the other beauty website that I really liked was beautifulwithbrains.com. They have some really great information there.
Cool.
So
we have to take a break,
yes,
right?
Yes, I think we do. When we come back, we'll talk more about beauty. Stay tuned.
Americans throw away 58 billion disposable cups every year. A lot of those cups will still be around long after you're dead. Kind of dark, I know, but I'm Greg from Kapow, and we decided to do something about it. We created the only glass travel mug that's 100% U.S. made. You can check it out alongside our complete line of everyday reusables at kapow.com, C-U-P-P-O-W.com.
You still paying attention? Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000, anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org, click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking all about beauty.
Yes.
And the products
that come from plants.
That come from plants that make us beautiful.
Yeah, so we focused on the ancient world.
Uh-huh.
And
the Egyptians.
The Egyptians, the Romans, and India. Now, Alice and I want to go to kind of a present-day plant product that has
a very interesting story.
Yeah,
you see it all over the place now. Yeah. Dr. Oz is always talking about it.
Slimming aids.
So it's not just the ancient or
the ancient civilizations.
The ancient civilizations that have used this. Currently, and this is from the Botanical Garden at Kew's website, one plant that has been used by people for centuries for one purpose has led to an interesting story with an unusually happy ending. Hoodia gordonii. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hoodia, yeah.
Hoodia is widely used in the commercial production of slimming aids, a modern day example of the need to recognize not only the traditional uses of wild plants, but also to respect the communities that use them, as illustrated in the commercialization of slimming products containing hoodia. For generations, the indigenous people of the Kalahari Desert in southern Africa have used hoodia as a food to quench their thirst. In the mid-1960s, the National Food Research Institute in South Africa tested whether hoodia did actually quench thirst. They discovered that it actually suppressed appetite. And in the late 1990s, the active principle in hoodia was identified and patented as an appetite suppressant, and Western drug and food companies then focused on how they could develop hoodia-based products as slimming aids. And I think I have purchased a few of them myself. I don't think I ever finished them because I was always kind of a little freaked out. Like, what am I taking?
Yeah.
But I do know there's a lot of talk about it. And the development of these products was based on the traditional knowledge of the indigenous peoples. And the companies had to negotiate a benefit-sharing arrangement with the San, S-A-N, people. The agreement ensures that any company selling products containing the hoodia appetite suppressant share the financial returns with the people. So
that's amazing, right?
I mean,
like they didn't intend it. They were thirsty.
Right, right.
They were thirsty. They were not trying to lose weight.
No.
By any means.
Probably just the opposite.
They're like laughing all the way to the bank now. They're like, yeah. Oh, these Westerners are taking,
these fat Westerners. Chubby Westerwitz.
So, but it's really great because usually, I mean, there's such a long history. And Alice and I have talked about it on so many shows about, about, you know, Europeans going in, taking the resources, right? And sometimes decimating populations of plants. Uh-huh. This was a great story, I thought, of like, okay, we're going to use your knowledge. We're going to make money, and we're going to reward you. And we're going to share it with you, which I thought was really a great story. So now that's one plant, but it's not just plants. And as all of you know, plants exist in communion with other creatures, right? And it's not, they don't just live in a plant universe by themselves, except maybe, you know, in some, maybe on Mars, you know, or something. So it gets interesting. Like, for example, the banyan tree. It's called Ficus bengalensis. That tree is used for the production of shellac, which is an important ingredient of French polish. Now, shellac is derived from a resinous secretion called lac, which is produced by various insects living on the tree, right? So the most commercially important of which is the lac insect, Lacifer lacca. Now, why do we care? Because shellac has a lot of industrial uses, one of which is hairspray, right? So when you're spraying hairspray, you're spraying insect secretion on your head. I don't even know where to, like,
this is so such a crazy.
And then
our recording engineer is scratching her head, holding her face.
People need to know this. And lac dye is also used in skin cosmetics. So when you see lac on your list, and companies have gotten more and more, I think, transparent about what's on their ingredient list, you now know that it's from this insect that lives on the banyan tree and is secreting this to make your hair, you know, to make that like spike.
To make you look gorgeous.
To make you look gorgeous, okay? So continuing with the obsession with fair and unblemished skin, right? Cape chestnut, right? It's called Calodendrum capense. The bark is used in a lot of cosmetics, and it's used to dye the skin whitish. You know, so we're still, you know, and the seed oil is used in soap making, but you have to get to it quick because also birds and monkeys really like to eat it. So we're like sort of competing with other creatures, you know. Now, it's really interesting to see, you know, these are things like Alice said, who's the first person that decided to try that, right? Who, you know, so indigenous peoples did have these different uses for things.
And I wonder how it chemically, how it works. Does it change the pigment? Is it temporary?
Or is it permanent? Or does it refract the light in some way?
Right.
You know? So
I'm always curious as those bronzing.
What are they doing to us?
Because they really make you look orange.
Yes.
You know? Yes. So is it orange tint that you're putting on? Because it does wash off.
Yes.
Or is it changing the actual pigments
in your skin?
That's
a good question, because a lot of them, when you put on, they don't have color.
No.
It's like you put it on and it's white.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of,
it's like,
know,
30 minutes later, you're kind of orange and you stink. It's a little stinky, right?
So we're really not that different from from Cleopatra and the ancient Romans. And I have a confession to make, all right? In high school and through my college years, I was obsessed with the ancient Egyptians. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously obsessed with their fashions and their heavy makeup, okay? So I spent a good part of the 80s covering my eyelids in bronze eyeshadow.
Well, who didn't in the 80s?
I know, and lining my eyes with black coal. That stuff goes, I mean, one big, you know, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
And I
just ask the Cure.
No, I know. And does that stuff go bad? No. I mean, you know?
It does, actually.
Yeah. So I never really gave any thought to what was in that.
Right.
Into those products, right? Mm-hmm. I just put
it's really only been the last, like, 10 or 15 years, I think. And that, you know, the whole, like, use of these products on animals and
the animal testing was atrocious, and in some cases still is. So I just wanted to look Egyptian. I mean, I just wanted that like whole jeweled eye and that like silhouette, you know, it was just so cool. So then doing this research and also over the years, you know, just becoming more aware of all the chemicals in our environment and our food and and that we use in
all
products,
the processing.
Right. I have two products. I thought for this show I would share two of my favorite products that I use regularly, and as a comparison, one is pretty much entirely plant-based, and the other one you can gather from the, we're going to read you the ingredient list, Alice and I, is chemically based. So Alice, why don't you read the first one? It's my favorite sunblock cream. It's Eucerin, okay? And it's like a sunblock moisturizer. So Alice is going to read the ingredients on this thing that I put on my face.
Water, glycerin, C12 through 15, alcohol, benzoate, dimethicone, cyclomethicone, cetyl alcohol, cetearyl alcohol, cetireth 20, glycerol stearate, SE, sodium lactate, lactic acid. Again, that's lac.
Yes.
That's the lac. Hydrogenated cocoa glycoside.
Okay, that might be.
That might be okay.
Plant-based.
VP, whatever VP means. Hexadensine copomolar. No, that does not sound.
No.
Copypolymer. Copypolymer.
Right. Polymer sounds petroleum-based.
Yep. PEG-40. Okay. Castor oil.
Okay, good. That's good.
Right. Sodium cetearyl sulfate. Xanthan gum.
I think that's made from plants.
Yeah. Trisodium EDTA, sodium hydroxide, alumina, cimethicone, phenoxythinol, and DMDM hydrantoid.
Okay. What the hell is that?
I don't know what any of that is.
Right? That's crazy. Right?
Water is the best one that I know.
And the castor oil, we pretty much know.
Yeah.
Okay. So now by comparison, another product that I really love is made by Dr. Hauschka. And we're going to have Dr. Hauschka, someone from Dr. Hauschka on the show later
this
month.
Tell our listeners who Dr. Hauschka is in
case
they don't
know. Well, it's a cosmetic and beauty company that started in, I believe, Switzerland in the 1920s and 30s. And they were really super ahead of the curve in terms of just using botanicals, using homeopathy and stuff. And we're going to talk more about that. So they have continued with that tradition of using natural products before people really like focused on that, you know. So I'm going to read to you the ingredient list in their rose day cream, which I really love. So they have water, they have peanut oil, they have beeswax, they have...
Why do you get to read the good one? I had to read the one that was all like convoluted.
I could,
save the good one for yourself.
Hey, I put that stuff on my face. Just look at me.
It's enough effort.
I know. Okay. All right. We have Althea officinalis root extract, Rosa damascena flower water, which is the the perfume
damascena.
Rose. We have Hypericum perforatum flower.
We use Hypericum.
Yes,
that's
leaf stem. We have shea butter. We have sorbitan olivate, which I'm guessing is maybe some kind of olive product. We have avocado oil. There is something called polyglycerol 3.
Those all make a great salad.
I know. They have citronellol, geraniol, linalool, limonene. These are all like fragrances. Citral, farnesol, benzyl alcohol, and Rosa damascena flower extract, Rosa canina fruit extract, carnauba wax, zinc sulfate, lecithin, and Rosa damascena flower wax. A lot of rose stuff, obviously. It's rose oil. Now, that stuff makes my skin... It feels like velvet when I put it on, right? So, you know, I try to, like, balance the two.
Yeah.
When I know I'm going to be in the sun, I put on the sun blocky thing.
Yeah.
You know, the one with that. But when I'm not, like, in the winter, I put on this rose stuff, and it's like pushing your face into a rose flower, you know? And
it's interesting, Carmen, that you talk about the sunscreen, because my husband is in a nursing program right now. And they were talking about sunscreen in one of their classes, in one of their chemistry classes. And it is the worst. The chemicals are so bad for you. It's almost better to have your skin burned. Honestly, and that was the question, is what's worse? You know, the sun damage or this these chemicals. And also these chemicals really inhibit any vitamin D from getting into your system.
So we're getting
system.
Vitamin D deprived now because of putting...
Yeah, because we're also hyper about it. And what he was saying, the chemist was saying, you know, you have to like find a balance, you know, and use a 10 or use a 15.
Oh, so instead of the 50 and the,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you want your skin naturally has what it needs to protect itself. You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
Granted, if you spend hours and hours and hours like we do outside, you have to put something on,
yeah,
or else you'll just fry yourself and then you'll become dehydrated and,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
the whole.
And I think you're right. I mean, and that's what I'm trying to do with these two products. And the point of mentioning them and reading these boring list of ingredients is that, you know, now in this contemporary era, we are struggling with that.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have these choices of, uh-huh, really great products, both artificial and natural. And we're, uh-huh, trying to find a balance of what to put on our bodies, just like we're doing with food.
Uh-huh.
You know, how much can you afford to buy everything organic?
Uh-huh.
A lot of us can't.
Right.
You know, so you,
right,
kind of have to get informed. So to share with you all, Alice and I asked some of our friends to share,
yeah,
some of their products too, because we wanted to see what other people out there are using and what
thinking
they're
about,
and thinking,
right,
about, right? So we asked some of our Facebook friends to share their favorite products that are plant-based, right? So our first friend that chimed in last week when we asked them is Amanda Thompson. She's a great blogger
uh-huh,
on Kiss My Aster. She's, uh-huh, a really, really funny lady. She uses this product called Bearded Lady Natural Deodorant. It has baking soda, arrowroot powder, coconut oil, shea butter, patchouli, and lavender oil.
I knew you were going to say patchouli.
Yeah, okay. It's okay. You know, not my favorite smell.
Yeah.
But there isn't any.
But it does work. My brother is a big patchouli oil person, and it really does work to keep odor,
yes, it's
away,
such a,
you know,
strong,
yeah.
So that's really interesting. So that was an interesting choice. There's,
uh-huh,
no alum,
right?
There's baking soda
and lavender,
you know.
Yeah, it's great.
Now our friend Diane Kolak,
uh-huh,
who is very into health and eating really well, she uses calendula cream. Her favorite is called the Essential Calendula Salve with PNW Honey by Bodyceutical. And Alice and I love calendula flowers.
Yeah.
That's like an ancient herbal plant.
Such a beautiful plant.
It's a,
yeah,
you know, it's just a great, it's like a unruffled kind of marigold.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Diane also uses neem oil,
uh-huh,
on her dog Queso,
uh-huh,
to keep fleas away.
Okay.
So that's good,
uh-huh,
you know? And then one of the most beautiful ladies I know in the universe who has amazing skin, I had to ask her what one of her beauty secrets was. And Dawn B, my friend, uses this product by Cibu, S-I-B-U. It has sea buckthorn serum. Now, sea buckthorn is this incredibly beautiful thorny shrub that lives by the sea. There's a couple of different types, and it has orange berries. And the serum comes from these orange,
ooh,
berries.
I'm going to look into that.
It's a very cool, and there's a lot of products. And people actually in the northern countries, I think they use the berries to make juice. Like they, you know,
okay,
it's like a Scandinavian,
uh-huh,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting to see all the different plant derivatives,
mm-hmm,
you know. Ellen Zakos, our great friend, who was also on the show, and she's a forager. I had to ask,
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she's a great forager.
She said that her vet makes a face scrub from maple water and ground black walnut shells. So she said the grain is really perfect, not too abrasive, but it's great for people with oily skin like me. So that's really interesting. That's a good byproduct of, you know, nut harvesting,
right?
You know,
right.
And I know that the black walnut is also a dye.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother used it to dye her socks brown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My grandmother used it in soap.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really great. Okay, but now Alice and I have had to save the best for last because Tracy Mahoney is one of the funniest people I've ever met, and she's just as creative as the ancients and like using whatever materials available,
uh-huh,
you know, to make herself feel more beautiful. She wrote this in her message. I can barely relate this story without laughing. A few years ago, my friend and I were doing some kitchen table research on of rumored beauty products,
uh-huh,
pouring 100% clay kitty litter in a blender with water and a touch of olive oil
meow, meow.
Makes the most hilarious facial mask you will ever wear. And I totally can picture her wearing this. She said, we laughed until we couldn't laugh anymore. I suggest you try it. It works. She said, we also massage plain yogurt into our faces. And that felt amazing, but we laughed very little.
Yeah. Have you ever done the mayonnaise on your hair?
No.
The fat.
Is really nice. Eggs.
The eggs is really an amazing
Oh, I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? Did we shout out to Mike Seaver yet?
No.
Oh, we forgot to do that last week. And we want to shout out to Mike. He's such a great fan. He sends us photos of his like garden experiments. Yeah.
He's a truck driver.
Yes. And he gardens on the side. He loves gardening.
To our podcast as he drives cross country.
Yeah, it's so great.
He's from Tennessee.
Yes, Morristown, Tennessee. So just a shout out to you, Mike. Thank you for sharing your photos of your gardening experiments.
And your tomatoes.
And your tomatoes.
Keep on trucking, Mike.
Keep on trucking. Anyway, I think we've come to the end. We've gotten about as beautiful as we can get.
I think we've talked about sheep fat as less.
Yeah, as much as we can. Yeah. So the next few weeks are going to be all about beauty. There's going to be a whole bunch of really interesting guests. Thanks for listening to the show.
Today's engineer is Liz Smith. Today's break music was provided by Mamarazzi. The theme song to our show is Paul Andrew Watling Super Compu Global. And today's sponsor is Kapow. Thank you for listening. And if you liked what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe on the show. You can listen on iTunes and Stitcher, and feel free to get in touch with us at Heritage Radio Network and become a member. Next up is a short clip of Let's Get Real with Erica Wides.
Thanks for listening.
Why would anybody eschew or throw away or reject the bones of anything? Bones are culinary gold. Bones are the shit.
Erica Wides wants you to use your bones and stop throwing them out. Here's an excerpt from episode 116 of Let's Get Real.
And you know how we all like to talk about nose-to-tail cooking now? It's all about nose-to-tail cooking, using the whole animal. Well, how about cooking the entire animal and then taking its bones and boiling them for soup and then cracking those bones open and sucking out every last bit of marrow and fat in them and then throwing the bones to the dogs so they could chew on them and build up their teeth and jaws so that then they can help you hunt down that next wild antelope to put in your pot. That's nose to tail. I mean, hell, that's paleo for reals. Like, that's what paleo is really all about. Bones are literally the foundation. Bones are the bones of Western cooking. The foundation. I mean, the French word for stock is fond. Fond means foundation.
If you agree with Erica and want to hear more from her, all episodes of Let's Get Real are available on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.